welcome listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip on this beautiful Easter weekend. I want to remind our listeners that Shooting from the Hip is hosted by SimTrainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road, just across from DP&L. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at 937-293-3914, and we'd be more than glad to discuss any of your firearms-related needs or interests that you might have. If you want to get on the show today, give us a call here at the studio at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and we'll get you in the queue and get you in the air as soon as we can. I want to start off today's show by maybe just engaging Mark and you listeners in a little bit of dialogue reference to a situation that is it's kind of a double-edged sword, so to speak, and that's the current status of the industry, particularly the lack of availability of product corresponding with record sales of both guns and accessories over the last probably 12 to 16 to 18 months. And in particular, Mark just mentioned recent statistics revealed that sales are already, or NICS checks are already up an additional 30% over what they were in March of 2011.
20%.
20% over 2011. That's still a pretty significant number. And it's it seems like every other month or every month we're setting record numbers of checks that are being conducted on a regular basis, which ultimately means that the product's going out the door at record numbers. I heard a couple of our members come in the other day. They were at two places. One was over at Vance's in Columbus, and I think the other was at Gander Mountain or one of the other similar type box stores, and said that they had to take a number and wait almost an hour to 2 hours just to get up to the counter, and then only to find out that what they wanted was not in stock.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, which is consistent with what we found. I'll just give you a couple of personal examples. We attended a show down in Texas in January, and at that show, I ordered 50 guns, and I've received five of the 50 and still waiting 45 of the 50. One, I can tell you that the majority of those were Rugers, and of course, Ruger, based on earlier announcements we've made and some people may have seen in the media, they're over a million guns down, producing at maximum production at the present time, trying to catch up, given a pretty good outlook that they estimate they'll get caught up by early to midsummer. And the thing is, though, the gun orders continue, even though places are cutting back on the orders that they're taking, because the manufacturers, not only Ruger, but others, are saying, hey, look, we're not going to take orders right now because we have to catch up with the backlog. And that's what's going on. And it's simply a supply and demand issue. Record sales. I know our listeners have various reasons why they're buying. They're increasing buying. They're buying extra. They're going out looking for different things that they may not have bought in the past. And I'd like to hear from you. What are your reasons? What's going on? What's going through your mind? Again, being in the industry, it is a double-edged sword, because in my business, for example, I have to have bullets. And right now we're lucky that ammunition's in pretty ample, substantial supplies. But you have people that want firearms. They go through our classes, and our classes are at record numbers of enrollments. And they complete a class and they want a gun. We have the try it before you buy it program and the basic class, and they complete that class. They find the gun that's right for them, and they're having a hard time getting that gun. And the one thing that I'm afraid of, and we talked about it just the other night with several people, they come through class or they go through a lesson or they do the try it before you buy it program. They find the gun or two that they like. They go to the gun store doesn't have it, and then somebody convinces them to buy something other than what we have found and what they have found is good for them. Now, in some cases, that's going to pan out. I'll just be quite blunt with you that it will work out, because some of the semi-autos in particular, and also many of the revolvers, they function similarly, and it's not going to be a big deal. But the value of the concept that we've implemented at SimTrainer is that we find the gun specifically for the person. They go out, they buy the gun, they continue to practice, they take additional training, they carry that gun, and everything works out real well. But that's obviously an impediment when you can't get the gun. Somebody comes in and they need a Ruger SR9, and they go to the store, and all they get are a Taurus 24/7 or or something else, and somebody convinces them to get something as a, as an alternative.
And a lot of the popular guns right now, we simply don't have available. The Springfield Armory XT series, we can still get some of those.
Yeah.
I don't know if we can still get XDMs or not.
They're going real fast.
They're really going quick.
The numbers are in single digits in most cases, and it's real. It's very frustrating because we call up our suppliers' inventories, and it's 80 to 90% zeros across the board.
Yeah, I was looking at just this week at Ruger, and there are 44 different stock numbers of just the handguns that that our distributor carries. There were two that had any stock, and they were both similar models, and they're not concealed carry type. There is a 22 Charger, which is a great little gun, but it's a very special purpose kind of thing.
Yeah, recreational shooting
exactly.
The limit of that particular firearm.
Target shooting and so forth, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I had purchased several coming out of that show, anticipating that I'd stock up. Well, we're already on the bare bones, and we have people coming in. And just the other night, I had some Smith and Wessons that I, when I first bought them, I thought, wow, did I maybe overstretch my bounds?
Yeah.
And I've now sold out of those Smith and Wesson M&P and M&P Compact. So, you know, there's lots of reasons, and I think most of them are good. You talk to people and you hear them say they're worried about, you know, where the country's going. They're worried about the current political agenda. And people are just, you know, the biggest reason I found is that the naivety and the lack of information is starting to go away. People are realizing that guns aren't bad, and that, combined with the need for personal safety, the desire for recreational shooting. And we've had a number of people who have taken shooting up as a sport, as a pastime. There's an individual at the range that Mark and I just talked to a couple days ago that for years and years and years, he was a computer guy, sat behind a desk and punched keys. And I think he probably, if I'm not mistaken, Mark, he started in computers when computers first became popular. That's how old he is.
Probably, I don't know.
Back in the 40s or 50s. Or
well,
50s
I'm that
or 60s.
Old.
and he said that it wasn't until about a year and a half ago that he started to get involved in the shooting sports, and he's had a great time, and he's been a great member. He's taken virtually all of our classes. He's repeated a couple of the classes. He's come to the shooting league on Tuesday nights, and he's having a great time, and he found it to be very interesting. Now, he's partnered up with a friend who's a shooting enthusiast and has been for 30 plus years, and he's bought different guns, and together they play with their toys, so to speak. They come to the range and have a good time and share each other's firearms and push each other to get better and take the training and engage in dialogue and have good discussions on a variety of related topics. But I want to hear from our listeners. I want to hear what's going on in your minds, what's going on in your heads, what you feel about how things are going, where we're going in the present time. Again, it's a good thing in the industry to see that happening. But again, it's kind of tough, though, when you have a person come through class and then they're going to have to wait for a gun. It's like anything else that you purchase. When you want to buy something and you go out there and you find out, let's say it's a car, you test drive the car and you want to buy the car. They don't have the car. They say they'll get it in. They don't get it in. You start looking at other cars, and next thing you know, you're into something different, and or you're moving on to something totally different. You're not going to put your money into a new car. Maybe you say, I'm just going to hold off and keep the car I have and drive it until the wheels fall off, and I'm not going to get a new car right now, which is fine too. There's pros and cons on both sides, but it's just an interesting dilemma that we're in the industry at the present time. And I will assure you, based on conversations we've had with manufacturers and manufacturers reps, they are working as hard as they can to produce product. And what we found, even though the guns now are becoming more and more scarce, the accessories, because obviously once the increase in gun sales occurred toward the middle to latter part of last year, now the accessory orders are picking up and catching up, because people have the guns. Now they want the holsters and the sights and the different accessories to go along with firearms, cleaning kits, something as simple as cleaning kits.
We couldn't get those for months.
Yeah. We just recently got a stock of those in, and my distributor called and said she had 17 or 18. I took them all because we use those. That's such a critical part of what we do. you have a firearm, you shoot your firearm, you have to clean your firearm. So we had to have those in stock. And Mark's come up with an idea, even though we can't get all the calibers in many of those cleaning kits, it's simply a matter of changing the brass bore brush, and all the other accessory parts are the same. So we've been able to convince people that if you have a 40 or 45, you can use a 9mm kit and just use a different brush, which we stock at the store also. When we can get those, yes. But simple things like that, it's just hard to come by. And it's an interesting dilemma. And if you're so inclined, give us a call today and let us know what your thoughts are. I also want to remind our listeners that one of our partner facilities, Peabody Sports, is leaving their current location at 2786 Wilmington Pike and moving to a new location in Springboro. And John and his staff down there are at the store, I think, through this weekend, and they're liquidating their entire inventory at between 45% and 50%, accessories only, not firearms. But they've got some great deals going on in firearms, because obviously when they're moving, they'd like to sell those instead of having to move those. So if you have a chance, be sure to stop down at Peabody Sports at 2786 Wilmington Pike. That's in the Odd Lots Plaza there on Wilmington, just north of Dorothy Lane, right behind Skyline Chili in Kettering. So if you have a chance, go ahead and stop by the store. Their phone number, if you want to call in advance, is 937-424-8883. Again, Peabody Sports relocation sale at 2786 Wilmington Pike in Kettering.
Let's take a chance to go out to the phones right now. We'll talk to John in Spencerville. John, welcome to the show.
Hi.
How can we help you?
I've got a question about long arms.
Okay.
I'm getting a little older. I don't see quite as well as I did 30, 40 years ago. And we're bench rest shooting at 100 yards with rim fires. Do you have any hints on what would help out there? Rifles, scopes, ammunition, things like that.
Well, I will tell you that is there any limitation as to the configuration of the firearm? Is it single action or bolt action only, or semi-auto? Are you restricted as to what you can use?
Not really.
Okay, because I'm just going
to... Most of the guys are shooting semi-autos and a few bolt actions. Some are using 17s.
Is it okay to use optics, like a scope?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, and optics, I'm one of those guys with the same problem with the arms getting too short, and I can't get that gun far enough out to see the front sight. So optics makes a tremendous difference in that regard, because now you don't have to worry about a front and a rear sight and getting them aligned. You just have to line up the scope. You would still want to have to be centered in the scope so that you have the full view of the scope, but you put that crosshair on the target, and as long as you've got your scope aligned, that's where it's going to go. Obviously, you know, at 100 yards with a 22, you've got other factors like wind and so forth to also take into consideration.
Yep.
You know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You got a brand or a combination that you would like?
Well, I will tell you right now, the Ruger 10-22s, can't go wrong there. The Smith & Wesson M&P-15, it's more a tactical type weapon with the True Glow Red Dot. Just a simple True Glow Red Dot.
Great way to go.
$50 to $75. And the gun itself, the Smith & Wesson M&P-15, you're going to pay about $450, $500 when you can get it. The Ruger 10-22s, when you can get them, are about $300. So all of them are good. And with that Red Dot, and the big thing is, use the same ammunition. Because with rimfire in particular, once you start using the ammunition, get it zeroed in, use the same ammunition to make sure you get more consistent patterns with your shots.
John, thanks very much for calling the show. We need to take our first break for the hour. If you'd like to be part of the show today, call the studio at 457-1290. 457-1290 is the number here into the studio, and we'll get you up on the board, and you can be part of this discussion as well. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio WHIA.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Jeff in with Mark from Sim Trainer, and we're going to go right back out to the phones in a minute. But what I want to just mention, the last caller was talking about a rifle for bench rest shooting at 100 yards, and my experience is pretty much any of the popular brand rifles, whether they're bolt action, semi-auto, or otherwise. I also want to throw in there the Henry lever action rifle. I just saw a couple of them. They're actually putting lever action tactical. Now, I thought it was interesting because I could just envision a cowboy back in the early 1800s with lever action rifle with an optic on top of it. It just didn't exist.
Yeah, it's not there.
They've made them tactical, and guess what? To make them tactical, they just put all black accessories on them and put an optic on the top, but the concept is identical. But the point I want to make is, regardless, again, if you get a good rifle, my son has a Savage bolt action rifle that we just picked up in trade several years back, and we put a very inexpensive scope. I think we have $200 in the gun, and Mark will tell you that out to 50 yards, he's only 14 years old. He punches the center out of the target, and he laughs at us because he outshoots us in many cases.
Yes, he does. Yeah.
And but you get a gun. The key thing, I think, my experience is to use the same ammunition. Now, if you have a box of 22 rimfire that you want to get rid of, fine, go out and shoot it up. But if you want to get involved in trying to competitively shoot that gun, whether it's in a formal competition or against your buddies, use the same ammunition. Sight the iron sights and or the optic and or scope in with one box ammunition or type ammunition and stay with it. And it'll give you a lot of positive results. But let's go right out to the phones, Mark.
Tommy, how can we help you today? Tommy's calling from Moraine. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Yeah, I was wondering, I acquired a 22 with a feeding tube.
Okay.
It's 22 long. It's a Remington 910, probably about 15, 20 years older gun.
Okay.
And I was wondering where I could find a feeding tube and how easy it is to put one in myself.
Is there something wrong with the one you have? It's damaged in some way?
It's missing the feeding tube.
Oh,
I
see.
I have to manually put a shell in and shoot it one time. It's a 15 shot.
Okay.
What happened there? Somebody probably took it out, or they might have just moved a little bit. Then when it got transferred from point A to point B, it fell out. And nobody paid attention to the importance of that particular part of the gun. But the first suggestion I would say is go out to the internet and get a hold of Remington and see if you can dial into Remington's website and see if they might have it. You could also check up at Old English because they have networking with a lot of manufacturers and with people who provide miscellaneous parts, particularly for those not so common guns like the one you're talking about. And they should be able to help you and direct you in the right direction. You might get lucky and they might have one on hand, quite frankly.
And another place that you can go on the web is Brownells. They have a lot of parts for different types of firearms as well.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks very much for calling the show. We've still got about another minute or so, so let's real quick go out to the phones again and talk to Butch, who's calling from Springfield. Butch, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It'll be a short time there, but I passed my concealed carry last Saturday and got the permit on Tuesday, or got the approval. And I'm looking, I like shooting a 9mm for targeting, which can become quite expensive. But as far as a concealed carry, it looks a little heavy, feels a little heavy. I've been looking at a Taurus 380. I'm just wondering your suggestion of what you would consider an adequate handgun that's powerful enough to do what it needs to do and yet doesn't blow your hand off.
Okay. Can you hang on just a minute? Because we're going to take a break at the bottom of the hour to go out to the news. So if you can just hang on, we'll be right back. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
This is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. And again, listeners, if you'd like to get on the show today, give us a call at 457-1290. Let's go back out the phones and talk with Butch in Springfield. Butch, right before the break, you had indicated that you'd taken your concealed carry class, and apparently you'd submitted for and received your concealed holder's license, and you were interested in trying to find a gun that was going to work for you, and you mentioned you were looking at the Taurus 380.
Right.
That's correct. Now, there's a couple of factors that in your initial assertion you were concerned about. You talked about a gun that would be good for you, and then also you mentioned the 9mm might be a little bit more expensive to shoot. Let me first of all address that issue. Quite frankly, the 380 ammo across the board is more expensive than the 9mm, so that's one issue that I just want to let our listeners know that even though the 9mm is a little bit bigger than the 380 in size, the cost for a variety of factors is not substantially, but is more. So that's one thing I want you to understand.
The 380 is more, yeah.
Yeah, the cost for the 380 is more. It costs more to shoot the 380 than it will the 9mm. Now, as far as the gun that's right for you, if you want to stay in the 380 range, and this is going to be on several years of experience. There are a lot of guns out there. I'm going to guess in the 380 caliber, there's anywhere from 50 to 100 and or more maybe. And what we've done is we've just tried to narrow that down to help people in their selection process. And we base that on our own internal standards and our own internal testing. And we look at several factors in the gun. How reliable is it? How easy is it in functional operation? And, you know, based on volume sales out in the public, is it a widely sold or widely distributed gun? And I will just tell you, you mentioned the Taurus 380. I don't know which one you were referring to, but we did some pretty extensive testing with their, what they called their, I believe the number is their 738, and they had a TCP, I think, total compact pistol. And when it first came out, and we had some problems with it. Matter
it came
of fact,
out kind of opposite the Ruger LCP.
Yes, yes.
That was their target.
Yes. And as a matter of fact, when I fired that gun the first time, I had 32 out of 50 rounds jammed. And we know what the reason is. I'm not going to go on the air about that. I'd be glad to discuss that with you in private if you come down to the range. We know why that particular problem existed then and, quite frankly, to a certain degree, exists still today. But I want to advise you that in the area of the 380, the Ruger LCP, up until last year, was the number one selling gun in the world. And the one that passed it up is its big brother, the LC9, the Ruger LC9. So from a 380 standpoint, I'd recommend the Ruger LCP. In the 380, I'd also give you, I'd encourage you to look at the Smith & Wesson Bodyguard or the Kar P380. If you want to move up to the 9mm and stay in the slim line or thin frame guns, obviously the LC9, number one selling gun in the industry right now. It received the Academy of Excellence Outstanding Gun of the Year Award last year. As I mentioned, it succeeded its baby brother, the LCP, in that category also, or in winning that award. But in also in the slim line, Beretta just came out with a well-tested gun called the Nano. The Beretta Nano. It's a single stack 9mm that it's a great shooter. I've fired right by now about 300 rounds through it, and we've been using that in our basic handgun class and in private lessons, and it's becoming a favorite of many people. And Ruger Beretta put a lot of time and effort into design of that gun, and it's a good shooter. So the Beretta Nano.
I think this is the Beretta's first striker fired weapon, isn't it?
I don't know for sure.
Most of the Berettas are double action, single action, hammer fired, and they did a really nice job with it. There's no question.
Yeah. One thing I like about the way Beretta did it, they waited until they had the gun available before they came out with it. And now obviously we're faced with this. Beretta's faced with the same problem that all the other manufacturers in the industry are faced with, that they're not available because people are buying up faster than they can produce them.
That's what I'm finding out as far as new weapons. There's definitely a shortage of.
Right. Tell me this. Let me interrupt you for just a minute, Butch. Were you considering one of those other, and then you dropped back and you were going to settle for the one you mentioned, or?
No, at this time, I'm actually just looking. I haven't shot for like 15 years, but back then I had a Smith & Wesson 15-shot 9mm I loved, but I made a trade on it with the kid when I came back to Ohio.
Right.
My son has a Glock 9. I don't know if it's LC9 or whatever you're saying, but he's telling me for plinking that the Glock that he has, you can also get a second barrel for that would shoot
22 rimfire
as well as your 9mm.
Right.
And I thought maybe what you thought about if you had the two barrels on like that, and if you just went about and plink, get a box of 22 shells and do your plinking with that.
I think that's fine. Actually, the Glock 17 and the Glock 19 both have what's called 22 conversion kits. And what it basically is a slide, a barrel, and a spring that's basically replaces the standard caliber slide, barrel, and spring. And you can then shoot the 22 rimfire when you're out plinking and reinforcing the practical aspects of shooting or mastering the basic principles of shooting.
Sure.
And you can do it on a low cost.
Yeah, we have one of those at the range. It's a really great way to get started, too, for people who are wanting to know they want to go with a Glock, and then we can put that 22 conversion kit on it, and they don't have the full power rounds to deal with to start with, and then they get to practice those fundamentals and not build any bad habits. It's a great tool.
Yeah, when I took my shooting part of my CCW, I never shot one-handed without racing with the other hand, and part of it, they wanted you to shoot out your left hand or right hand, five shots. And the 9mm really about pulled itself out of my left hand. I mean, I'm just not used to shooting from there.
There's the key point, Butch. You're not used to shooting from there, and once you practice with that and realize that maybe one of the reasons they had you do that is because they recognize the fact that in a real situation, your right arm might be incapacitated, and you may have to fire the firearm with your left arm. So it's not a bad idea, but understand that just like so many other things, if I had you go down to a Cincinnati Reds game and your number got drawn and you had to throw a pitch into the pitcher's glove and hit the strike zone for $100,000, you wouldn't use your left hand. You'd use your right hand. Because you do everything in life with your right hand. You eat with your right hand. You open door with your right hand. You do everything with your right hand. It's the same with shooting.
The problem I have is I'm left eye dominant with right hand dominant.
Sure. That's not a problem. My daughter, who's a police officer at a local department, is the same thing, and she's a sharpshooter. She punches the center out of the target. You just got to know. Let me offer you an opportunity that we might be able to help you with kind of all those issues that you raised, and you're not alone in your situation, but if you'd come down to the range, we could do it. One thing I think, if you would do the try it before you buy it program, where you rent a gun or two that you're interested in, and you let us kind of stand beside you and give you a few pointers, and I'd be more than glad to do that, and I know Mark would do the same. In about 15 to 20 minutes, we could probably find the gun for you and get you well on your way to getting what is going to work for you in the best way.
Okay. I just might do that because I'm really confused with so many out there right now. But the Glock, I just felt was a little big to try to carry as a concealed. Maybe it would conceal nicely, but 38 looks like it would conceal a lot better.
Sure.
I would do that. What's your total evening hours?
We're open on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday evening from 5 to 9.
Okay.
And you can come down anytime during the day on Saturday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., or on Sunday afternoon from 1 to 5, but we will be closed tomorrow, by the way, in observance of Easter.
Don't blame you there.
Okay.
You have a happy Easter, and thanks for all your information.
Thank you for your call.
Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Don, who's been waiting for a while. Don, thanks for hanging on. How can we help you today?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I know you've probably handled this question 1,000 times, but could you review the current changes to the CCW law, in particular carrying in an automobile?
Sure. In September 30th of last year, 2011, the law changed, and there are now no longer any restrictions on the ways that a person who's licensed to carry a concealed handgun can carry that handgun in a motor vehicle. Used to be there were four ways you could carry, like in a holster on your person or in a glove box and console and locked in a box and so forth. All of those have gone away. And now all you need to do is just be safe. So any way that you choose to carry it, as long as you have a license, as long as you are following the rest of the requirements, there are no specific restrictions on carrying the firearm in your motor vehicle. It doesn't change the way people carry unloaded. So if you don't have a license or you're carrying a long gun, it needs to be unloaded. And there are four specific ways that you can do that. But as far as carrying concealed, carrying a handgun loaded in your motor vehicle pursuant to your license, there are now no restrictions. They really made it a lot simpler, don't you think?
Yes, sir. Thank you for your help.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling the show. We've got one more person on the phone. If you'd like to be part of this show, call the studio at 457-1290, and let's go out and talk to Paul in Englewood, who has some questions. Paul, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Okay, my wife, I bought her a Beretta PX4 subcompact.
Mm-hmm.
I took her out shooting, and she can shoot my gun. I've got a Smith & Wesson Sigma 9mm. She can shoot it without a problem. But when it comes to shooting her gun, whenever it goes to reload the next round, it always jams.
Okay, well, I would tell you that it's probably not the gun, number one.
It's not the gun, because I can do it without a problem.
Sure.
But I was wondering if any pointers I could use to maybe correct that?
Well, the first thing, the most common cause for that particular malfunction is what we call limp wrist. She's not holding her wrist locked out, and it's not allowing the slide to work on top of the rail the way it's supposed to. And as a result, when it comes back, it doesn't have enough energy to strip that round off the top of the magazine and load it into the chamber, and as a result, it causes a jam. So the best thing you can do there is just encourage her to lock out that wrist and make sure she keeps that wrist locked out while she's shooting round after round after round. That's the first thing. The second thing is making sure that she has a good strong hand grip and that she's got a proper support hand grip, making sure that the two are working in unison together to do what they're supposed to do. And by a support hand grip, we found that when we talk about, you know, how much, what percentage of work one hand does over the other, the strong hand does 80 to 90% of the work, and the supporter weak hand does anywhere from 10 to 20% of the work. So she should basically be able to shoot that gun with no trouble one-handed, and we're using the second hand just to better stabilized to give her a better opportunity to hit her target in a more accurate fashion. But for the most part, it's going to be the strong hand that's going to do the work. But the single most significant factor in the problem you described is likely going to be not locking out the wrist.
Okay. I was just curious because, like I said, she can shoot my handgun and it reloads without a problem. But when it comes to hers, it just won't reload.
And some of them are just a little bit more finicky than others, but that's the issue.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much for calling the show. We're going to take our last break for the hour here in just a few seconds. So if you'd like to get on the show, call the studio at 457-1290. 457-1290 will get you in and get you up on the board. And we would like to, if you maybe you've got some other questions, maybe you have some things you've heard in the news that you'd like to talk about, call the studio number at 457-1290 and we'll get you up on the board. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. We have busy phone lines, so let's go right back out to them and talk to Bob, who has a question about cleaning a shotgun barrel. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Just found out about the show. I was driving through the community, and I just started trap shooting, and I have an over and under gun, and I wanted to have the discuss the procedures on the proper cleaning of those barrels.
Okay. I'm going to turn that one over to Jeff.
Well, first of all, there are so many manufacturers with so many makes and models. Some of them just swivel open. Others will actually break down and come apart. But either way, the big thing is to consistently go, when you clean, get a good simple shotgun cleaning kit, okay? And that's just going to consist of a rod that's going to be about 3 feet long, and it's going to have various types of end pieces. One of them would probably be brass, about the size of the or the circumference of the barrel, or maybe a little bit bigger. And there might be a couple others. There'll be a patch pusher and some other items, but it doesn't have to be an expensive kit. Matter of fact, the shotgun kits can range anywhere from $8 to $15, and that's all you need. Make sure you have some good solvent manufacturer or whatever you prefer. It doesn't really matter, but you want to always clean from the breech side out toward the end of the barrel, and make sure you go all the way through the barrel each time, as opposed to rubbing or binding up that cleaning device inside the barrel. Make sure you go from breech all the way out to the end of the barrel and then all the way back out through the breech side, so that you're allowing the accumulated debris to go out on both occasions. And I will tell you that depending on how much you shoot, make sure you do that in an area where you don't mind getting a little bit of debris. You might want to put some newspaper down or some plastic or some paper towels, because there's going to be a significant amount of debris that will come out of the gun, out of the barrel at that time.
You want to be sure to push the brush all the way through the barrel and then pull it back out the other through the end. And you typically do that from the breech end as opposed to pushing in from the muzzle end. Unfortunately, he dropped off the line. He was on a mobile phone and he fell into a hole, I guess. So thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out and talk with Kelly from Vandalia. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you. My question has to do with the law that we don't hear much about what defines an abode and what your gun rights are, where or when you're at the abode. And in particular, if I were to go out to a state park lodge, which typically has a no gun sign on it because it's a state building, But that's my abode for the night. And my question is, where does this abode rule apply and not apply, for instance?
Well, I'm not familiar with the term abode and how it's utilized in the law. However, in reference to the state lodge, I'm assuming you're talking about a place that's like a hotel. It has multiple rooms, but on the entrance door, it has the guns prohibited sign. Obviously,
right.
State law prohibits you from entering into or on those premises with the firearm. Okay, we're talking about the structure, the actual hotel, so to speak, place where you're going to stay. And
okay.
I think that's also going to include if you had a cabin within that that facility. That's where it might get a little bit gray area. But I think the general rule would be in those state buildings, and a cabin is also a state building, you're going to have a statutory prohibition. Now, if you were at a private hotel and they had that sign up there, it wouldn't necessarily, it's statutory, but it's not in and of itself. The individual hotel owner has the authority through the law to put the sign up to prohibit you from having a gun on private property. But back to the state facility, again, if it's a structure, you can't have it, so you're going to have to secure it in your vehicle before you'll be able to spend the night.
Okay. I would. I have heard otherwise on this, and I don't get consistent answers. I would encourage you maybe on another show to look up this law about abode. It basically says wherever you're spending the night, that's your abode, and that's your castle, and that's where you're allowed to carry a gun as well. Not just your physical home.
Okay, I don't think that you'll find that in Ohio Revised Code.
And I'll tell you what we will do. We will make sure. We have a CCW class coming up this week, and I'll make sure myself or Mark brings that up with our attorney and has him look into that. And we will be sure to address it in a succeeding show because it is a point of interest. But I agree with Mark that I don't think we're going to find authorization for the extension of abode taking your home to a state park. Now, you go to a hotel and the hotel doesn't have the sign up on the door, certainly you'd be able to retain possession of your firearm during your stay there. But the state park being a government facility is going to have the mandated prohibition. But we will look into that and report back. Will that suit you?
Kelly, thanks very much for we've got a lot of folks on the line. So let's go out to Mike, who has a question for us. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
How can we help you?
Yeah, I got a question on a particular firearm. It's called a High Point. Have you heard much about them, or are they a reliable weapon? It's just more for primarily the home. It's not going to be shot much. It's just strictly for the home.
Is in terms of home defense?
Yes, sir.
Okay, see, that's even more important because if you're talking about it, if it's not going to get shot much, but when you need it, it absolutely has to work. That's a really critical factor.
Okay, and is it a quality gun or...
Well, in the simplest terms, if you know guns are rated 1 to 10, based on our experience and exposure, those are down in the area of 1 or 2.
Okay.
And I don't really want to badmouth them because they're an Ohio manufacturer. They do a pretty nice job. If you were telling me you were going to get one of those just to do some plinking and shoot on the side, I'd say go ahead, no problem. But when you talk about what you said, where you're going to just have it in the home and you're going to use it for personal safety and self-defense, I advise you to look towards more quality firearm.
Okay, now, are you guys open? And I didn't get quite to catch all the show, but what are your hours during the week?
Monday, Wednesday, and Friday evening, 5 to 9, and Tuesday and Thursday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
All right, I'll see you guys soon. I appreciate you.
Great, thanks very much for calling the show. Let's very quickly go out and talk to Pete in Centerville. Pete, we got just less than a minute left on the show.
Okay, I've got two real quick questions about the same thing.
Must have dropped off.
When you go to
Pete, are you there?
At a dealer.
Okay.
They call in, and sometimes you're put on hold. And I've been told if the dealer doesn't get a response back within 3 days, they can go ahead and sell you the gun. And the second part of that is I've been told that if you've ever held or hold a security clearance, you're more likely to be put on hold than anyone else.
We're going to have to take that for another show. Unfortunately, we are out of time. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. Stay tuned at the top of the hour with Bob and Gloria for There Is a Season